Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema here with Benjamin Solak. We are, well, I'm supposed to say midway through the week, but we were a day late, so we're technically a little bit further than midway through the week. It is Thursday, but normally what we'd be doing, because we're going through the summer scouting series for the 2020 NFL Draft. We're on the quarterback position this week, so normally this day is our, like, melting pot day. We looked at the top two guys at the beginning of the week. We looked at Tua and Justin Herbert. Then we went over Jacob Eason, Jake Fromm, Shea Patterson, and who else am I forgetting?
Lion Brewerke.
Oh, thank you for that spoonerism of Brian Lewerke from Michigan State. Now we're going to get to everybody else. We're going to get to as many guys as we can name, because the point of this exercise and what we want to do before training camp starts and before college football really gets upon us is, we not only want to give you guys some thoughts of ours, but we just want to make sure a lot of these guys are on your radar. And so during this day, during the summer scouting series, that's kind of tough to say. I'm going to mess that up more than once during this entire show.
Spoonerize it.
It starts with the same letter, Ben.
Alliteration. Avast.
Hey, chicks dig alliterations. Today, we're starting with Cole McDonald.
Just, with no evidence, just chick-thick alliteration. Today, listen, we're starting with
just cold hard facts. We're starting with Cole McDonald today. I did my five-play prospect on him earlier this week. I really enjoyed doing this, not only because I enjoyed going through Cole McDonald's film, but I also kind of like had the creative idea to pair it with like Hawaiian culture, because Hawaii feels like it's so like out there off the mainland that I wanted to get really creative with the article. So I had a really fun time doing a lot of research for Hawaiian religion and Hawaiian culture and kind of tying that into Cole McDonald. And a good segue to that is his uniqueness. And there's a lot of unique things in both. And I think that's why it made a good marriage for it, especially for the topic of the article. Ben, my thoughts on him is already to keyboard. What are your thoughts on Cole McDonald going into this year?
All right, so again, I think I've already referenced this game before, but Hawaii, Colorado State, week zero, first game of the college football year. All I know is that Rolo is bringing the run and shoot back to Hawaii. Coach Nick Rolovich, head coach.
Run and shoot, baby!
Run and shoot, and I'm so excited. I can't wait to watch it. And coming into this game, the quarterback that everybody's kind of interested in is KJ Carter-Samuels, who was Jake Browning's backup at Washington, transferred to Colorado State. And we're watching this game, myself and Kyle's watching it, and we're kind of chatting during the game.
That was the first game of the year, was it not?
Week zero, game one. Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah.
And this dreadlocked Hawaii quarterback, who apparently was like in a fight for the starting job, is out here slinging it like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
His natural arm strength and critically retention of arm strength on the move, ability to throw from different arm slots, so he gets that little bit of a sidearm sort of a release, and to maintain velocity and push the ball down the field, I mean, is thrilling. The dude has an absolute hose. Now, the same issues and question marks that people are going to have when a quarterback comes out of a super duper spready offense, like you can like talk about Oklahoma's offense as a parallel, you're going to get in the run and shoot. For our listeners who aren't familiar with the run and shoot, an offense developed by June Jones, fell out of favor 1980s. I'm not positive, but what the run and shoot allows, and you see echoes of this still in Earhart Perkins and West Coast style offenses, is there's a ton of optionality built into the routes. And so very frequently, especially slot receivers who have the ability to cut inside and outside because there's room to the sideline, have multiple route breaks they can execute based off the coverage they read. So both the quarterback and the wide receiver are reading coverages, and they always work into space. And so Cole McDonald is a very, very, very heavy first read quarterback, because the run and shoot offense is built to just make one guy on cover.
But
right?
I don't think it limited him. Like, there are times where I think he goes to like a second progression or run and shoot,
sure,
which I did not think was going to be the case.
Right, because to say the run and shoot is an exclusively first read offense where it's designed to get one guy open is a gross oversimplification, right? It is. And absolutely, McDonald shows two things. One, he shows the ability to get off his first read when it's clearly capped. I will say, I think his footwork goes to poop when it happens, but that's fine. And the second thing is, he creates on the move nicely. And so clearly this guy can process post-snap. It's not just like everything he sees beforehand. And then, like, you know, if you spin the defense on him, he's terrified. So McDonald, like I joked where we kept quarterback one to Thursday, McDonald and then another player who I forgot to put on this list, so maybe we won't talk about him. But McDonald and Julian Love, quarterback out of Utah State.
Cornerback out of Notre Dame?
Julian Love, or Jordan Love, quarterback out of Utah State. Thank you very much. I did that at the Senior Bowl to Dax Raymond, his tight end. I was talking to Dax. And I was like, oh, tell me about your quarterback, Julian Love. Love this, love that, love everything. And Dax is sitting there super politely. And then he like goes to answer the question. He goes, yeah, we really love Jordan. And he kind of like looked at me a little bit. And I was like, ah, dang it, I'm an idiot. But anyway, Jordan Love, Cole McDonald, Hawaii and Utah State are the two guys I would circle right now that you will not hear talked about by any of the major NFL media outlets yet, but they're the two guys who I think could push to be in this top quarterback conversation. Thrilling physical talents with a really nice developmental track thus far in their young careers.
Yeah, and I think
McDonald's got to stay healthy.
Yeah, I think that people like to discredit McDonald just because obviously they don't get to watch a lot of his games, and you have guys like Timmy Chang and Colt Brennan, who came before, who just put up a crap ton of yards and stats, which they didn't really do a lot with it. And so McDonald, people just go, oh, it's another Hawaii QB. Here's the thing about McDonald, and you touched on it there. His arm is better than any of those guys that came before him, any of them. And I think that it naturally is. The big problem with Cole McDonald to me, and what I wrote in my article in my five-play column about him, the throwing motion. Like, it is actively a problem for him. And you talked about him getting a little bit off script, can get the ball out in different kinds of ways. You like that about a guy. But I saw too many times in the – I think I watched five games of him. In the five games that I watched of him, there were too many times – and this is a guy who has a below 60% completion percentage in an offense that is built to get players open, have easy reads, and get the ball out. And this guy's got a less than 60% completion percentage because a lot of times that throwing motion betrays him. It is way too long. He brings the ball all the way down to his hip. It's like Tebow, where Tebow just wound up a wheel to get that ball out. And the thing is, I don't think Cole McDonald has to do that. His arm is good enough to where he doesn't have to do that, but he's clearly just not compact, not controlled in his arm motion. He not only has a wheel motion to get it out, but it's also a little bit of sidearm. It's a little bit of an overthrow. It's kind of strange. And you'll just see little clips that I highlight in that article where it's like, this guy should not be missing these throws. And I've got to think that the only reason he really is at the consistent level that he's missing them is because there's so much motion in that throw. There's so much to go wrong. Get this guy with somebody who can really make him comfortable with the different, more compact throwing motion. And you're talking about a guy who has a ton of tools that you really could like as a quarterback. That's my thoughts on him.
Listen. Gunslingers are going to gunsling.
I even mentioned, man, in the NFL, you got guys like, you know, Phillip Rivers. Take him for example. He's got a weird as hell unorthodox throwing motion, and it works. But the thing is, for Phillip Rivers, he does the little things well enough with that throwing motion. Cole McDonald doesn't yet. And right. That's why I think it's got to be a little bit changed. He's got to make it a little bit compact. We got to run through so many guys, so we're just going to kind of do some quick hits here. KJ Costello, what'd you think? You were a Pac-12 guy last year. What'd you think of KJ?
I was big on the KJ train coming into the season. I'm still there, but I'm much quieter. I'm a few cars back. I'm chilling near close to the caboose. Costello is at his best throwing 50-50 balls down the field, which is not what you want. That's some Trace McSorley business. His short to intermediate accuracy issues are really frustrating. I think it comes down to the fact that if you put like a grain of salt into the wheel, if you get a little bit of pressure in his face, if you disrupt his pocket, I mean, his feet go wonky, right? He's at 3-9 when he should
they
be at
do,
6.
They do, but I mean, you've probably watched more games than I have. I think I watched 3 games at Ellinger, or not Ellinger. Ellinger's who we're talking about next. I watched 3 games at Costello, and I didn't see these issues as like super glaring.
I hear you, because there's like, if a guy can throw well off of adjusted platforms, I don't really mind it. And like adjusting your platform to feeling pressure is fine. I think Costello is a little bit too far there in terms of like, it takes a little flash of color for him to get some panic in him. But the reality, like to me, I just do not see a guy who typically has the strong placement you look for in a potential starting quarterback in the league. Now, okay. 2017 to 2018, he didn't take that leap, but Stanford passed it a lot more than they did. 2017, he was playing in relief of Keller Crist. 2018, first full year as a starter. So we're in year 2 as a starter.
Right.
There's still very much a chance for that placement to jump up, and in which case we're talking about. I also think arm strength-wise, he's just average, but he's interesting for sure.
I mean, you want a hot take right here?
Give it to me.
I like Costello more than I like Jake Fromm right now. That's my take.
That's healthy.
I was watching KJ's game, and I don't love Jake Fromm. And that's a big, like, I even went back because I had this thought as I was watching Costello. And perhaps I was just watching, because I was only able to get to a couple games of him. So there's a lot more analysis that has to go into it. But I was watching these games of Costello, and I'm like, man, this guy, he's hitting. Because here's the thing with Fromm. And I think we talked about this the other day when we were mentioning him. He does a lot of stuff over the middle. He hits a lot of the easy stuff. He hits the stuff that's in space. When it comes to those NFL throws, hitting it down the field, accuracy down the field, hitting his NFL wide receivers that he had the speed for, he didn't do it consistently or really at all very much. When it comes to throws straight to the sideline, those ones where you got to truly zip in and get that velocity in there, I didn't think that he did that very well. I saw a lot more, maybe not a lot more, I saw more NFL throws in KJ Costello's tape than I did Jake Fromm's.
I feel like right now where you are in Costello is where I was last year, and I'm just a little bit like I'm a little bit scarred on it. But listen,
I see your future, Trevor. You're right. Gonna walk back on this, and maybe I will. I don't know.
Right. I'll never ever disparage a fellow warrior in getting off that hot May take, baby. It's the time of the season.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had DeAndre Francois as like QB1 going into last year, so I'm not afraid.
Right, exactly.
I'm not afraid to get a takeout knowing that we have a full year, and honestly, what is going to be the most important year for all of these prospects still coming up. But man, I couldn't help but think that of these two dudes. Did you have another Costello point, or are we moving on to Ellinger?
No, I was not going to lob you Ellinger. I was going to lob you somebody else. I was going to hit you with, speaking of Florida quarterbacks that you think are a lot better than they actually are, Okay. Let's talk about Felipe Franks.
All right. Yeah, Franks, absolute butt cheeks when he first came into Florida. The kid was barely playable. He was coming from a McElwain era where there was literally just nobody else to really have competition for him. So he thankfully gets Dan Mullen in there. I think that there's been definitely some steps in the right direction of how he handles pressure, how he handles a pocket, even some accuracy here and there. I still just don't think he's accurate enough. The dude, he's huge, right? I mean, he's a 6'6 guy. He's got a long body frame, and I always try to say this in my work. You know, we always covet the taller guys with the bigger arm. Why? Because they can often have more muscle into their throw. More muscle means more power generated down the field and with velocity, often does. But the bigger the arm, the more controlled you have to be, because if not, the more trouble you get in. So that is kind of my thing with Felipe Franks, is still, this guy is not technically sound in all of the areas that you would need him to, whether it's footwork or his throwing motion or how he's getting the ball out, what he's reading, those kinds of things. And because of that, his consistent accuracy still stays low. I believe he is still also below that 60% mark. And so there were some flashes with Felipe last year that made me think, hey, this guy is getting better, but he still needs to take another step, another two steps to really be an NFL caliber guy. There's a lot of, you know, the big arm, has the tools, can be a little bit mobile for a bigger guy. There's stuff to like, but he's still a step or two away from really being a potential NFL player.
Yeah, Franks isn't good. I didn't think we were going to find a quarterback worse than Nate Stanley on this day.
Nate Stanley's dead last for me. We could just touch on him really quick. I watched two games of Nate Stanley.
Coward.
No. Nope.
Trevor.
No. Nope.
Coward.
No. Nope.
Listen.
No. Nope.
I am not here.
No. Nope.
I don't like being very, like, you know, I do my little, like, here's the thing about Drew Locke, he's not very good jokes. But I don't like being very negative about players. But, like, Nate Stanley needs to learn how to pull the trigger. He just does not pull the trigger on downfield throws. And there's no
NFL future for that. Nate Stanley can't even hit, like, hitches and screen passes, brother.
He was quarterback too for a particular analyst coming into 2018. Never forget,
bro. He had the best two tight ends in the country last year as his
Trevor,
security blankets, and he couldn't fucking hit them.
Trevor, they got blanked by Northwestern, and I was at this game at Kinnick Stadium, and I swear Noah Fant was gonna kill him on the sideline. None of the linebackers could cover Fant.
He can't throw. I was midway through the second game I was watching of him, and I thought, there's no way this guy's actually on scholarship. There's no way that a Big Ten school, if this clip gets out, we're in trouble. But there's no way a kid at a Big Ten school has a scholarship that's got this bad of a accuracy.
Listen, it's just, we're just Kyle going in on CJ Beathard. Like two years ago? Two years ago now.
Niners great. Niners great, dude.
Yeah, Niners great. But Stanley, I'm not there on him. I think Franks is wildly inconsistent. A point to your Cole McDonald, you mentioned this with the McDonald throwing motion, and then you talked about Franks' size. The bigger you get, the longer your arm is, the harder it has to harder it is to have a compact throwing motion, which is necessary for normalizing placement. You need that J path to be tight. You know, you hear the quarterback mechanics coaches, they talk about this. McDonald has that issue because he's a big fella. Franks is even bigger fella, and he has that problem. He gets super duper loopy, and it's a problem.
Sam Ellinger, now that we got the two bottom guys out of the way.
Can I tell you a Sam Ellinger story real quick?
A Sam Ellinger story?
Is it Gurr or Jur? Hard G or soft G?
Oh, I guess I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Sam Ellinger? I don't know.
Sam. Sammy E. Well, the story is simply this. I'm a weird closet Sam Ellinger fan for the only reason that Kyle is a super big Shane Buscelli fan. They were, you know, kind of like dual quarterbacks for the past couple of years for Texas.
Oh,
Buscelli
right.
has since transferred to SMU. But it would just really, really piss Kyle off anytime Ellinger got into the game with Buscelli. So I just started rooting for Ellinger just to bother Kyle. And all of a sudden, I like low key am like this Sam Ellinger stan. I like talked myself into it. But I mean, future NFL, Taysom Hill, future NFL fullback.
Yeah, no, it's crazy that you guys. It's crazy that you guys would have this rivalry over two bad quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, that's the long and the short of it. It's true. Ellinger, man, I mean, he has a couple of pretty throws a game.
He's what, 6'1", maybe?
Yeah, and he's maybe certified big boy, too.
Oh, yeah, no, he's built. No, Sam Ellinger is a, wait, how do you say his last name? How do you say it?
I say Gurr, Ellinger. Or no.
No,
I said Ellinger.
I said Ellinger. I don't know. I don't know which one it is. Tweet at us and fucking roast us for whoever's wrong. But he's a fun college player, no doubt about it. And like, he's fun for Texas too, because Texas is kind of like on the rise, figuring out what they're going to be. They were prominent for so long and they were super sucky, stayed in their old ways for too long, dug a giant hole. Now they're coming out of it. They've got Ellinger, who's a running type of quarterback who can give you some decent throws to, you know, when little Jordan Humphrey is there, and then Colin Johnson's pretty easy to throw the ball to. So he does some nice things. He's truly he's a gamer.
I'm there.
I mean,
you never listen. I believe
beyond
in the game
that though, what I don't think he has the arm. That's real. The first game that I was watching of him, God, what was it? Was it the USC game? I think it was the USC game. And in the first quarter of the USC game, this guy was putting his body into 15-yard throws, and I went, oh, boy. Oh, no. Sam, no. And he actually he warmed up a lot more, I think, during that game specifically. But there was other tape that I watched of him that he was a little bit better on. But, yeah, go ahead.
Texas throws it deep a lot, and it's not because Ellinger's good at throwing deep. It's because if your quarterback's bad at throwing, period, getting the deep balls matters more than getting the short ones. I mean, if he's going to miss half the throws, you might as well chuck it deep and try to get 40 in a quick one. When you got Colin Johnson, too, it makes sense. But the thing, like, here's my thing with Ellinger. Gamer, gritty, he's going to be a coach's guy. I think he, like, is going to have positional flexibility. Like, he is a fullback out there with the ball in his hands. And, like, you know, I can't say, like, oh, he does Tebow-esque things with you on the show right now.
You bring that even up at any point this year, I'm subbing you out.
He's strong.
I'm putting Jordan on the podcast.
I'm
subbing you out for Jordan full time.
The people would probably support the decision. Ellinger is enough for Texas that I think they can win the Big 12 with him. Given that,
of course,
I think Oklahoma's got their worst quarterback that they've had in the past 3-4 years.
How dare you?
And West Virginia's going to be in a down year because Holgo's gone. And so, like, Texas, to me, is a very interesting Big 12 champion this year because Ellinger brings a ton of experience. If he cleans up on some bad decisions as a thrower, that offense is going to stay on schedule, and the defense is really strong. That secondary is impressive. So, I think they can win the Big 12 with Ellinger, which is interesting to think about.
Joe Burrow, your thoughts? Go.
Yeah, I had an agent hit me up about Joe Burrow.
Low key. Wow, cool. Humble brag. Okay. Nice. Agents, I'm Ben Solak. Agents hit me up.
I'm sorry. I'll be more clear. I had Lee Steinberg himself.
Oh my God.
And Adam Schefter. I had, you know,
Adam Schefter DM'd you because he follows you.
All right. Sean McVay called me and asked me my thoughts on Joe Burrow. Okay. I had somebody, doesn't matter who, ask me for my thoughts on Joe Burrow, and I was like, I really haven't watched that much of him. Let's go see what I'm missing. And it turns out, not that much.
I mean, like, he's Joe, okay.
He's yeah, okay. I mean, he's average. And
yeah,
he,
there you go.
He has average arm strength. He has average mobility. He's not very, that great of a creator. I think in the pocket, you can see that he's comfortable, and I think he works his feet through his progressions nicely, which helps keep the LSU offense on schedule. But, like, he's going to be as good as the LSU weapons are. And I don't think he elevates a team in that way. And cool. So, I mean, like, Burrow is probably going to push for the bottom half of like, the Senior Bowl roster, and he'll probably get it. But to me, like, you know, career backup is the ceiling there with what I've seen from Burrow thus far.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right there. Who would you rather have as your quarterback in a predominantly passing-based offense, meaning just not an RPO offense, in the NFL, Joe Burrow or Sam Ehlinger?
Burrow. He's a better thrower.
Okay. All right. As long as we're cool on that level. Because yeah. I thought that you were going to say Sam, and I was going to be like, all right, brother.
No, it only runs so deep, the hive for this.
Who else did you? Who are the other guys that you wanted to talk about? Nathan Rourke.
Rourke. All right. So here's the thing about Nathan Rourke. Future NFL wide receiver, maybe.
No, dude, he's too thick.
He's got 270 rushing attempts.
No, he's going to running back.
Yeah. Well. Okay. 270 running. Dang it! Rushing attempts over the last two seasons. He averages over 6 yards a carry. He's got 36. Rushing touchdowns over the course of two seasons. And yeah, he is like 6'2", 210. And so, like, running back, wide receiver, I don't really know exactly
large.
Where he fits there. But yeah, he's a big boy, and he's really, really agile. I mean, he is a quick fella. And there are some escapes in the pocket where you're just like, listen, that's not a thing that quarterbacks are supposed to do. You need to go somewhere else. And honestly, sometimes when he throws it, you think the same thing as well. But I thought he really improved as a passer. Rourke was actually an Alabama recruit at one point, and then Ohio snagged him away. Yeah, I know, right? He was going to Alabama to be a third stringer, but I don't care. It's still a fact. So Rourke ends up at Ohio. Trevor, let me get through it.
I'm sorry.
Rourke ends up at Ohio. First year, there's a lot of flashy stuff. I think he's a really surprisingly pretty deep ball. His 9 ball is solid, and he's taken a step forward in year two. He had, like, there was in the beginning of the year, they, like, weren't sure if they were starting him or not, but he got a hold on that job, improved his depth of target, improved his completion percentage. His throwing motion is clearly more normalized. To me, he's one of the more exciting group of five guys that we have. So Rourke is really exciting. I'm very interested to see if he continues to develop as a passer. He's a true dual threat guy. If not, he definitely has NFL athleticism at another position.
Only got to see one game of him. It was the UMass game, and it was hilarious because the first two snaps of the game, he took off and run with the and ran with the ball, and he actually, you know, he got a bunch of yards, and the commentators were kind of like praising him, right? They were like, oh, you know, Nathan Rourke, blah blah blah, you know, he's a good weapon with his legs, really excited about this kid, what do you do, blah blah blah. First pass of the game, which was the third offensive play that they had, worst pick six I've ever seen. It was hilarious. I actually laughed out loud watching that tape. But then he got much better as the game went on. The rest of the game was a lot better than that, but that was funny. I didn't watch Montez from Colorado or Neil from Vanderbilt. Did you watch either of those guys? Okay, take over.
All right.
You're in. I'm
so
tagging
firstly,
you in.
Firstly, I went to go see if I could find a particular Nathan Rourke
tweet.
I'm going to
go finish a glass of milk.
And it turns out I have like 17 tweets about Nathan Rourke, which is more than I should have for a player of his caliber. But anyway, Montez from Colorado. Colorado goes 5-0 to start 2018. He's got unbelievable stats. He's getting Heisman run. You watch his film, the dude throws a 9 ball or a screen. He has nothing else in his arsenal. There's nothing there. And accordingly, when hero of the world, Laviska Shenault, goes down, Colorado's offense goes nowhere because Montez can't distribute in the middle of the field. And so, dude, huge arm, good mobility. He's got some Josh Allen-y aspects to him, but I need to see him hit a throw over the middle of the field with accuracy right now. He doesn't have that, so I need a big step forward. He's working with a quarterback coach whose name I do not remember, but he's really Colorado acquired him, and he was really a positive develop on Montez, and so that's good. Neil out of Vanderbilt. Neil at Ball State for 4 seasons, 34 career games started, really poised quarterback, good in the pocket, very comfortable working through his progressions, not fazed by the blitz, not fazed by pressure. Physical tools aren't overwhelming, but he's really, I think, smart and comfortable and predictable. So the people who liked what you got from the Brett Rypien, Kyle Lauletta's over the world over the past couple years, I think will like Neil because he falls a bit into that mold. He transfers to Vanderbilt. He's not locked in per head coach Derek Mason as like he's the starter, but he's the best guy they've got. And he'll likely be the starter. Vanderbilt's got weapons. Jared Pinkney at tight end, Kalia Lipscomb at wide receiver, and Deshaun Vaughn, great running back. So that offense can't be good. Neil needs to prove that what he can do against the MAC, he can also do against the SEC. He's a guy who with a strong season will end up at the Senior Bowl. And that'll be another huge opportunity for him to show what he can do with top-tier talent. So Neil's a great sleeper to watch. I released a list from my post on Wednesday about transfers who could make some 2020 noise in the NFL draft, and Neil's one of my sleepers. Him ending up at Vanderbilt, literally a perfect spot. Couldn't be any better for him to take a step forward. So those guys are really exciting. And then I brought up Jordan Love, Utah State. Thrilling. He makes some touch throws that really, really make your eyes pop. Natural arm talent. He's got some release issues, got some footwork issues. He can move. So we're a moldable piece of clay. But like McDonald, I said, had a really strong first year that popped some eyebrows, and now he's a draft-eligible player. If he continues momentum into year two, which obviously Matt Wells, head coach at Utah State, now at Texas Tech, it's going to be a new offense, a new system. If Love can continue growing on his momentum, he's absolutely like he's going to be a guy who I expect would make top five quarterback lists.
All right, there you go. That's 15 or so quarterbacks from the 2020, the potential 2020 NFL draft pool that we kind of ran through this week. Tomorrow, not only are we doing Fan Friday, which you guys got to get your questions in. I saw that some of you asked some questions earlier this week. I think one of them was Avengers related. The other one was like Pokemon related. Y'all got to ask those again. If you're listening to this, please ask those questions again. I'll search the Fan Friday hashtag in my handle so I can hopefully find them anyways. But if you see mine or Ben's tweets, just ask it again so it's right there so we for sure don't miss it. We're doing Fan Friday tomorrow, but we're also running through our top fives of this little group of 15 or so quarterbacks that we named. So, Ben, hopefully you've been keeping track. Hopefully you've been putting them in a little bit of a list because we're going to go down the top five, and that's going to be the top five that we're going to have and cannot change until draft night. So, hope you put a lot of thought into it because this is getting real serious. Can't change it at all. Every scout will tell you that the most recent year of tape doesn't matter. You throw it out.
I'm not willing to put my name behind
high school
this.
Tape is the only thing that matters.
Listen, what was his market share as a high school junior?
Listen, that
he
is...
He was not good when he was 15 years old. There's no chance he's good now.
Absolutely no chance. So top fives tomorrow, Fan Friday tomorrow. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.